priestly robes, and they sat down around our dining room table. And I said, "Guys, I don't know what I've done." And one of the men looked at me, and he was doing his head like this, and he said the word, "Picnic." His brother, sitting right next to him, was doing his head the same way and says, "Yep, it was the picnic." Go figure. I wasn't with them. I didn't really know what I had done. And here's what I had done to offend them so severely. I had made an announcement the Sunday before from the pulpit. Wouldn't it be great to have a church picnic? But you see, I was taking too much authority, because that's something you have to vote on. Leaders can't lead. They can't suggest anything without going through this ridiculous motion. And so, anyway, what is a pastor's role in a church? What is my role? What is the role of our ruling elders? Because this is a church led by elder leadership, elder government, not congregational government. What is our role here? Am I to be simply a facilitator, a moderator, a suggester, and then let you lead the church? That's certainly not what this verse leads us to understand. It says very simply, and I give you this from the Greek. The word obey means obey. And the word submit here in the Greek means submit. It can't be any clearer in the Bible. Obey your leaders and submit to them. For they themselves, emphatically placed in this sentence, they themselves keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account. So the first thing I notice here is very, very simply, what we're to do in leadership in a church is the congregation is to submit and obey the leadership of its elders. Now, this doesn't mean that you buy everything hook, line, and sinker. If you're like the noble Bereans, you're going to search the scriptures and you're going to have questions about, we need to make sure as a church that this pastor and these leaders are leading us correctly. Doesn't mean that I can ask you to go with me and drink some Kool-Aid and you'll do it. No, there's common sense in leadership in the Bible. But there's also something that is missing in many churches, not here, but in many churches, they don't have a congregation willing to learn and grow and to submit and to follow. I mean, we live in an age, and I think you will agree with me, that authority is challenged on every front. From our policemen and women, we've got just look at it. From the schools, from every aspect of authority, it's being challenged. In one of our school offices, there is a picture of a child writing on a chalkboard these words, "I will obey my teacher." And in the picture, this child is writing this over and over and over. Now, just for fun, how many of you ever had to do that? I did. I'll confess. Carl did. I knew it. Some of the rest of you did. You're just not telling us. But you think you could get by with that today? Why, you're going to hurt little Johnny's feelings if you put him up in front of the class. His self-esteem will be damaged. Why, you're going to be careful. You might have a lawsuit. And then for sure, there's going to be a parental outrage because someone took authority over your little Susie Lou. That's the culture and the world that we live in. I agree with many of you who work with children, and I've heard you tell me this, that when I see a rebellious child or a child resisting authority, it's usually the problem in the home. No respect being taught to that child. Young parents, please hear this. The Bible teaches repeatedly, over and over and over. Foolishness is bound in the heart of the child, but the rod of correction will drive it away. It's not the feather of correction. It's the rod of correction. And that correction is purposeful, because if you allow your child to grow up without authority and without discipline, that child is going to grow to be a very disrespectful adult and going to be problems for everybody. The media, of course, is feeding all of this responding to authority. I mean, again, we see all the news reports of the police uprisings and the military, a lack of respect for our military men and women, disrespect for laws in general, and disrespect in the church. Why do you think he had to write this verse for the church? If you will remember, back in the beginning of chapter 13, in verse 7, he says, those that have proven to be an example before you and that have passed on, don't forget them. Remember them. Now he's talking about the leaders that are alive right in their midst, right in their church, and he's saying, this is your congregational response to them. Obey them and submit to them. Anything other than that is a lack of respect. Now, as your pastor and one of the elders in this church, I want you to know, I take the Bible very, very seriously. And when I study the Bible, I don't study this text just to get up a sermon. I study this text because I want to know what it means. And when I'm standing up here before you, I'm trying to tell you what I have learned from the passage. And regardless what the passage is, it could be a good passage, an easy passage, or a very difficult passage. But this one's really hard to miss. So you, as a congregation, have a responsibility to us. Now, what is the motive here? Why should you be concerned about being a submissive congregation and a congregation that's going to follow? The motive here is that for they, that is the leaders, they keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account. Beloved, we are God's representatives right here in this body, in this local church. And our role is a spiritual role, not just a physical role, it's a spiritual role, to try and help you grow, to challenge you, to try and find places of service for you, and to try and motivate you and encourage you in whatever it is you're doing. But we are here first and foremost to represent God, to learn from His Word, and to try and lead you to follow it. Go with me to 1 Peter chapter 5. Just a couple pages to your right. 1 Peter chapter 5. Chapter 5. And then the first five verses in this chapter, just listen as Peter spells this out. Therefore, I exhort the elders, presbyteros, elder, among you as your fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ and a partaker of the glory that is to be revealed. And here's the word for pastor, poimene, shepherd, pastor, the flock of God among you, exercising episkopos, episcopal, oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily according to the will of God, and not for sordid gain, but with eagerness, nor yet as lording it over those allotted to your charge, but proving to be an example to the flock. Here's the picture of what an elder, a pastor does. These three words are synonyms. He's a pastor, he's a shepherd, he is a fellow elder, and he is an overseer. to cast oversight to the direction of the church. Back up to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. And here Paul is writing to this great church in Thessaloniki, as it is pronounced today. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 12. But we request of you, brethren, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord and give you instruction. That you esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Live in peace with one another. And then John, the Gospel of John, chapter 13 and verse 20. Listen to what Jesus says here. And this is very, very powerful. Verse 20 says, truly, truly, I say to you, he who receives whomever I send receives me. And he who receives me receives him who sent me. In a very real sense, the leaders that you have are here because God has sent them to you. And it's a humbling thing for us to be here. It's a humbling thing for you to allow us to be here and to have been here so long. It's humbling and gratifying to us. But your responsibility is, and it's going to get even more. Go back to Hebrews chapter 13. Here in this passage, the motive is that we're going to give an account for how we shepherd. But it says here, let them do this with joy and not with grief. This word with grief is a onomatopoetic word, a word that sounds like what it is, like the word buzz. This word is a moan or a sigh. The word of God to the congregation is, let your leaders do their work with joy, not with, oh, it's him again, or they've got a problem again, or, oh, you know what I'm talking about. And that's basically what the scripture is teaching here. We're accountable to God to keep watch over your souls, and in doing that, that's a heavy, heavy burden. And as a result of that, our job sometimes can be very, very difficult. Many pastors care more about the attendance numbers and the finances than about the spiritual maturity of its congregation. And I just want you to know, we, all of us, each and every one of us, have a heavy heart for this because we know God is holding us accountable. James chapter 3 and verse 1 says, be not many teachers or masters, for in they receive the greater judgment. We have greater judgment from the congregation and greater judgment from God. Well, when he says here in this passage in Hebrews, let them do this with joy and not with grief, basically what he's saying here is that leaders are subject to criticism. They need more joy than they need grief. As I thought about that, I began to just do some searching for statistics on pastors. And we're a bit of an anomaly here in a lot of different ways. The fact that a pastor and a youth pastor could tolerate each other for 20 plus years, that's one thing. And not just tolerate, it's been a great relationship. I know that's what you were thinking. We've had a few ripples. We've had a few ruts in the road. But it's a blessing of God for us. But this is not the way it is in many, many places. Listen to some of these things. 1,500 pastors leave the ministry for good each month, citing burnout or contention in their churches. This is from James Dobson 10 years ago. 80% of pastors and 84% of pastors' spouses are discouraged in their roles. Almost half of all pastors have seriously considered leaving ministry for good in the past 3 months. For every 20 pastors who go into ministry, only one retires from the ministry. 50% of pastors say they're unable to meet the demands of their job, and they're so discouraged they'd leave the ministry if they could. But they have no other way of making a living. Dobson writes, "When I share these statistics with pastors, they slowly, knowingly nod their heads. Yet when I share these statistics with the non-clergy, they're shocked. How can this be? I had no idea." A widespread super pastor mentality has led us to believe that pastors never struggle, never doubt, never get discouraged, and never wrestle with feelings of failure just because they're pastors. I hope over the years I've been transparent with you. I really do try to be transparent. That I have struggles in my life. It's not always fun for me. I have weeks when my heart is heavy, my mind is clouded, and I get to my office on Tuesday morning and I open the Bible and I read the text and I just go, I don't know how I'm going to get a sermon out of this. And as the week progresses and as I study and compile and read and research, it usually comes. Here's what Spurgeon said. I know of no life that has more trouble in it. I know of no occupation that brings more awful despondency of spirit on a man's mind than my ministry brings on me. That's the Prince of Preachers. There have been times when I've wished to imitate Jonah and take ship and flee away from the word God has thrust on me. For I am conscious that I have not served him as I ought. When I preached most earnestly, I go to my chamber and repent that I have preached in so heartless a manner. When I have wept over your souls, when I have agonized in prayer, I have yet been conscious that I have not wrestled with God as I ought to have wrestled, and I have not felt for your souls as I ought to feel. The errors which a man may commit in the ministry are incalculable. As a result of that, here are 10 common reasons why pastors quit too soon. The number one thing is discouragement. Complaints speak louder than compliments. You can receive 15 compliments and one complaint, and the complaint will stick. When you hear criticism and look out and see empty pews, it can be difficult to recognize the positive impact you're making. The key is to remember, no matter how much negative you hear, you're always doing 10 times more good. Maybe we need to be reminded of that from time to time, because sometimes we do. It's the black speck on the white wall. That's all you can see. And you can't see the rest sometimes. It does become discouraging. And then failure. Many pastors have difficulty recognizing success. They compare themselves to other pastors and other ministries. Comparisons produce only two outcomes. Number one, you think you're better, which results in excessive pride. Or two, you feel like you don't measure up, which creates a sense of failure. And I would say that's probably most of the situation with most of the pastors that I know, because we know we don't measure up. Loneliness. With so many people looking to pastors for guidance, it can be difficult for pastors to let their guards down. They don't want to come across as less than perfect. They feel they can't be transparent and vulnerable. And again, beloved, a lot of this just doesn't apply to me, because you have not forced me into that role. You have not caused me to burn out and have a desire to quit. Quite the contrary. I'm thinking about what this next decade might be. Then there's moral failure. The moral failure of pastors are magnified more than the average person. And the key to avoiding moral failure is creating a system of risk prevention. Whenever you meet with someone of the opposite sex, let your spouse know. Never meet behind closed doors and do not discuss relationship issues. And as you well know, my policy is I just don't counsel women. I'll talk to any of you once in my office. I will. But I will not schedule appointments to meet and counsel. Women should counsel women. That's just common sense. But so many fall into this trap. Pornography is another trap to fall into. And as I've been telling you for many years, there's software available for you to monitor your computer. And I don't know what you men are doing here with it. I wouldn't have a computer without this filter on it. I just wouldn't. It's too tempting. And the enemy knows our weaknesses. Financial pressure. Most ministries are nonprofits, so pastors are not compensated well. Anger, when things aren't going well. Pastors become angry with others, themselves, or God. Thoughts fall along these lines. I've done everything you told me. I went to seminary. I started a ministry. And now I'm dying out here. Burnout. Pastors are put on a treadmill. They go from ministry to a hospital visit to writing a sermon to meeting with congregation members. They just keep running until there's no passion or energy left. They become exhausted and depleted. Vacations and sabbaticals can provide perspective. Another key is empowering other leaders so that all the weight's not on the pastor's shoulders. And then you got physical health. Those are issues, especially as we're at the age that we are. Many pastors overwork themselves and simply do not care for their bodies. Pastors don't get enough rest or regular exercise. Number 9, marriage and family problems. Again, a lot of these things, I listen to this and I just go, wow, I am so blessed. While some of these do apply, I just want you to know that your responsibility to us is so great. And thank you for the job that you have done and that you are doing so that we don't fall into this trap and want to quit. The 10th thing was being just too busy and too driven. Pastors who don't protect their calendars, take time off, take vacations to do what you need to do. I added a 11th thing to this list. Too many picnics. I don't need any more of those. Well, I hope this gives you a little bit of a perspective of the Leadership 101 in a church. This is not maybe applicable to some businesses, although leadership principles are pretty general. But as far as a church goes, the Scripture tells you as a congregation, you are responsible to listen to us. To submit to the leadership, not without a challenge there if you think we're going a different direction. We're always open for that. But we're going to give an account. And we want to do this ministry with joy all the way to the finish line. I don't want to hit the wall, as they say, and you're running a marathon or a race, and you get and you're far along, but you hit a wall, they say, and you just don't think you have any left. And then someone comes alongside of you and tells you something that just gets you going again. And you make the race and you run it the way you should. The end result of all of this that I've been talking about pastors, the end result is it's going to be good for you. You know, as parents, we tell our children, you better do this, because if you don't, you're not going to like it very much. Well, same thing is true for a church. When a church is not submitting and making the role of leadership doable, then it makes it hard on the congregation. And that's what he says here. For this would be unprofitable for you. Now, I want to close this morning. I know this has been a little different of a sermon. Because, again, this one verse just needs to stand by itself. But there's 7 things that I think pastors, elders need to hear from their congregations. And I'm serious about this. Number one thing I would like to hear from you occasionally is, Pastor, how can I pray for you? You know, we ask you that a lot of times. How can I pray for you? How are you doing? What's going on? Sometimes it would be nice to be asked that question. And some of you do this. This man said, I do a lot of praying with people and for people while rarely asking for prayer in return. But I definitely need prayer in return because I'm not a super pastor. Some days I barely even feel like an ordinary unsuper pastor. Because on my own, I'm very simply a very weak man. So ask us that question. Second thing, sometimes it would be nice to hear, I'm sorry. I was wrong. Forgive me. Pastors have to withstand a lot of second guessing and unhealthier situations, criticisms. But we're called to turn the other cheek rather than repaying meanness for meanness. That's tough for me. Third thing, I would like to hear this occasionally. Pastor, I hear you're going on vacation. Enjoy your time away. There's always that little thing that said, well, how long are you going to be gone this time? And it hurts. Really does. And these are little things that you as a congregation need to think about the way you respond. Fourth thing is, let's give it a try. If we have a new idea or a new thing that we want to try, get on board. Let's, at least with the attitude of let's see what happens. Fifth thing, and I really do mean this one. Not that I didn't mean the others. But here's what I liked or disliked about your sermon today. And some of you do that for me. And I can't tell you how I appreciate that. And you know why I appreciate it? Because you're listening. And you're listening with a filter. You're listening with what you already know the Bible teaches. And you're listening. And if you disagree with me, I want you to tell me. Or if there's something I said you liked or didn't, tell me this. So that we can talk about that. Dialogue. It really would mean a great deal to me. The sixth thing is very simply, how can I help? Something's going on. I announce from the pulpit, we need this, we need that. How can I help? And the last thing, occasionally, don't be afraid to ask, Pastor, is everything okay? Maybe I sensed your sermon today wasn't as full. Your gestures weren't as extraordinary as they usually are. Is everything okay? And some of you do that. Like you do. You do that. You sure do. And it does. It means a great deal. And it helps us. It helps us. It reaffirms us. And it lets us know that our work is not in vain. Now you have a responsibility to respond to this morning's message. You're a congregation. Whether you're whether you've signed the blue card or not, you're attending here, you're a member here, and we're glad you're here. And you have a responsibility here to take care of what God is teaching us here in this text. Obey your leaders. Submit to them, for they're keeping watch over your souls. Let them do this with joy and not with, oh, for that would be unprofitable for you. You think about these words as we listen to this music.